Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today I am proud to be bringing you Living Labyrinths with Athena Dugan. Greetings and welcome, Athena. How are you?
Hello, Hercules. Thanks for having me here today.
Looking forward to your topic. I must let you and all our listeners know that my Facebook account had been hacked, and years worth of work is now either vanished or not accessible to me. So I will be constructing a new Lost Labyrinth of Lemnos group in the very near future. But my apologies to anybody who's tried to contact me or visit that and has not found anything there.
Oh, wow. That's kind of rough, because years of work is like, how do you get that back? You know,
I ask for inspiration and just start over again. And
well,
your topic is great. The labyrinth and ritual. I've been giving a lot of thought to my own labyrinth work, and I'm at that stage now. So when you shared your topic, I was very excited.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. Great. So, yeah, I'm just going to bounce around on a few ideas and just talk about it in general. Because
awesome.
For myself, that's how I came sort of to the labyrinth, because I wanted to see how I could use it in ritual.
I'm here if you need me.
Okay, excellent. So I'm here with my friend Ruth Ann, who happens to pop on by. Hi, Ruth Ann.
Hello.
Hi. And Ruth Ann and I have done a lot of labyrinth walks. Ruth Ann is one of my coven mates, and she's also on the board with the Artists Guild. Is that correct?
Oh, with the Episcopal Actors Guild.
Yeah. Cool. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, Ruth Ann and I have walked labyrinths together, and we've walked them in ritual as well. And tonight I'm just going to be talking a little bit about, walking the labyrinth in ritual, or using it as a ritual tool, the labyrinth as a ritual tool. And, it may seem easy because the labyrinth itself is a natural ritual. You walk it and, change occurs, and that's what happens when we do ritual as well. But when I talk about using the labyrinth as a ritual tool, we're not only just using the labyrinth to walk it, but we're it's the energy that's contained within all the circuits in the path that's helping us make that manifestation work. Now, when I use the labyrinth and ritual, sometimes I would love to put my altar in the center, but that's, I think it would depend on the purpose of your ritual or a personal choice, if anything. And usually when we're talking about the labyrinth and using it as a for ritual or a ceremony, there's a lot of different ceremonies, a lot of different rituals that we can do to make things happen. And since the labyrinth is a 4,000-year-old symbolic pattern, no one really knows what it was used for. We do know that it was walked. We know that it was used internationally, universally. It was used, in earth religions, in Christian religions, but it is not owned by just one religion. It's such a universal symbol that anyone could walk it, and you don't have to be spiritual. You can walk it, you could dance it. And the crane dance was a very famous ritual that used to take place on the labyrinth as well. And that was something that happened, dated back to as early as Theseus's time, in which he was responsible for slaying the Minotaur in the labyrinth. So when we work with the labyrinth as a ritual, path, we can also use it as a path of initiation, because the labyrinth is like a metaphor for life's journey. So in a way, when we work it in a ritual sense, we can use it as an initiation path. That is discovering ourselves in that moment. Or we consider it like the hero's journey, like it was for Theseus. He considered that like it was considered like a hero's journey. He had to get to the center to slay the dragon, you know, with this ball of thread that was his guidepost to lead him in and safely out of the labyrinth. Ruth Ann, let me just ask you a question. When you work with the labyrinth, do you, for you, does it feel like a ritual, or do you make it a ritual when you walk it on a regular basis, or how do you sum it up for yourself?
Well, if I do any ritual work, I'm always thinking of, you know, being in ritual. So if I'm doing a labyrinth walk, like a finger labyrinth, or even just walking on it like a little outdoor makeshift labyrinth, it feels like a mini ritual. You know, it
yeah.
just feels like I'm doing something more meaningful than just walking in a circle or in and out or whatever.
Right.
So, yeah.
So this was interesting, too, about when you ritualize a labyrinth. I mean, there's things that happen when you sometimes when you build a labyrinth, or most times when a labyrinth is built, is dedicated, or like it becomes like naturally ritualized because you're creating this space and this sacredness around it. So it's interesting, like even when we walk a hand labyrinth or whatever, we're still creating that ritual because we're getting in a certain state of mind. We're like creating sacred space through the meditation or just through being present, and through that our breathing, we're like starting to create make manifest or creating change. So I think that's an interesting part of using the labyrinth as a ritual tool. Now, some people might feel a little off put by the word ritual, but basically, it's ritual. Sometimes get a people feel negative about hearing the word ritual, but basically ritual is what you do, your daily practice. And, you know, and when it comes to, or a ceremony or, you know, just something that you do that has a prescribed order. And walking the labyrinth has that. It has three stages to it. And it's just like a ritual. There's a beginning, there's a middle, and the end. And when we walk the labyrinth, we walk in with an intention to, release any mundane concerns and to get to the center. We receive our information. And then when we return, we're reflecting on our journey. So there's three stages. Sometimes it's four. Some people see it as four, but also with when we're working with ritual, and if we work with a labyrinth, we start with our meditation. We get to the work of the ritual, which is when we're like in the center, or you know, after we called in all those elements or those things that's going to help set the tone of the ritual, and then we close down the ritual, and that's when we could either say goodbye to the energy that we created. We start to release that energy, and we could reflect on what we've done. And usually, and with always with ritual, we walk, when we walk a labyrinth, as we would do in labyrinth ritual, we walk with an intention, we work with an intention, you know, we help make manifest. You can jump in anytime you like, Ruth Ann, because you've experienced this as well. And, you know, you can share your experience, like what it's been for you, like maybe what happened afterwards for you when you've experienced ritual, walking in the labyrinth. I mean, have you had dreams or have you had more things come to light for you?
On occasion, yes, things come to light, and sometimes more so than others.
Yeah.
I guess it depends a lot on how you're feeling at that point, at that time, you know, the time that you're doing the ritual.
Yeah. Yeah, this is true. This is true. And, okay, so let's talk a little bit about, like, the purpose of ritual and ceremony. And basically, like I say, it's an action, it's purpose and repeated action, and it's about creating meaning. And it's and when we do ritual, whether it's in a group dynamic, we're creating and celebrating community, and we can do a ritual for that purpose, for creating community or celebrating community. There's rituals in which you can be rites of passage, and just rituals where we're connecting and grounding, or healing rituals, or rituals that celebrate transitions, dedication rituals. And there's definitely many rituals that you can do, I mean, on the labyrinth. And it's quite amazing. You can use either the standard classical labyrinth, or some labyrinths have that circle in the center that might seem more ritualized for some people, like even the Chart labyrinth. You know, they have the six petals that each represent, you know, the vegetable and plant life, and that's like on its own, it's amazing, and that has a lot of meaning when, you know, to folks who walk that labyrinth as well. So what do we do when we're walking the labyrinth as a ritual? So first, we want to plan what we're doing. You know, we want to state our purpose and pretty much be clear on it. Because sometimes, like say if we're doing a full moon labyrinth, I don't know, a full moon labyrinth walk, maybe you want to use a different labyrinth, maybe a labyrinth that, you know, has a circle in the center that'll remind you of that moon energy, you know. But either way, it depends on if you want to have your altar in the center or on the outside of the labyrinth. You know, this is you're setting up your intention, and you're setting up your space to be sacred.
That's right.
And, yeah, exactly. So, And two, what we're doing is we're creating change, not just on a physical level, but also on a psychological, you know, emotional level, because the walking a labyrinth in ritual, for ritual purpose, for purpose, can definitely have a deeper and powerful meaning as you're working within the circuits. You know, so what we want to do is when we start off, it depends on the the officiate whether or not if she wants to dedicate the space. But I would say it's nice to dedicate that space and that area to the labyrinth. You know, she can do this by walking the perimeter of the labyrinth and saging and watering, you know, like anointing with water, whatever. I know I'm going to walk through the stages that I do usually when I'm setting up my labyrinth for events. I'll go to all four corners of, you know, it doesn't matter if I'm doing a classical labyrinth or a concentric circle labyrinth. I'll walk to the four corners. You know, I'll walk the entire labyrinth, then I'll walk the four corners. And, you know, I'm saging and I'm blessing the elements. I'm blessing the east. I'm blessing the south, the west, and the north. You know, I'm calling upon these energies and to help make this space sacred, because the labyrinth itself is a container that's going to hold that energy. And you want to create that extra barrier. So when people are within that space, that they are within that space to also feel safe, you know. And usually with ritual, we always want to set the intention, and there's always a why. Why are we doing this ritual, right? Why are we doing this labyrinth ritual? And it's good, like, if you have a space, like, if you can be outside, that's even better, you know, because you're in touch with the elements. You're in touch with the, you know, divinity, the earth, you know, the earth mother, the sky father. You're in touch with all these elements that could be impactful for your labyrinth walk. But even if you're indoors, that's okay, too, because it's all about intention. And that's what I love about ritual is, like, you know, if, like, some people will get upset if they're doing something and they make a mistake. You know, say if you're walking a labyrinth and you don't know which way to go, you know, it's you just gently pass that person. There's no wrong way or, you know, there's no wrong way to walk a labyrinth. The thing to do is to take that first step, right?
Right.
Right. And, okay, so after, you know, the leader or the officiant or the, you know, the, I don't want to say the high priestess because it's not particularly a Wiccan ritual, but it follows those similar guidelines or outlines to make your ritual, your labyrinth ritual whole. You know, after you set the tone, you dedicated your space in your labyrinth area, you walked the perimeter of your labyrinth, you saged it. You know, now it's time, you know, either you could do this with the participants around the labyrinth, or they could be standing at the, you know, a few feet away from the entrance of the labyrinth, because they're going to be, you know, participating in the labyrinth, of course. Or sometimes what I like, if there's enough people, you can have them all circled around the labyrinth, maybe holding hands, you know, and help setting that intention, help keeping the space sacred, and help building that barrier. And then you can have them gather once again, entrance in the entranceway, and then start making their way into the labyrinth, you know, because that way you set your intention. And once they all get in, maybe you can start your ritual then. You know, if you have your altar in the center, they'll all be inside the labyrinth, you know, so you can start your ceremony. So you just want to make sure that you have your sequence of actions that everyone will go through. You want to make sure you have your choreography and your supplies, and whether or not if you're going to have music or if you're going to be, you know, doing song throughout your ritual. And if there's people that, like, say if you're doing a particular rite, say for a Sabbath or something, you want to make sure you have people assigned to those roles if they're going to be calling out particular deities or elements or persons. And it's always best to keep it simple. And you know what I find out when people are active in it's always good to have people participate, because I think that's when you get the best experience, you know.
Yes, participation is really good, because a lot of times if you go to certain rituals, like a public ritual or something, and there's a lot of people, if they get a chance to do something, if they're assigned something, then it's meaningful then. And
yeah.
A lot of times your mind could wonder if you're just standing around while somebody else is doing it and you're not doing any participation at all, it probably doesn't have much of a meaning.
And interesting enough, the participants, they're engaged because they're going through the walk, but there's the intention there that makes it purposeful. So if you're doing a ceremony, you know, say for a Sabbath, or say for Beltane is a famous one. Like I've seen, the pole would be in the middle and people are dancing the labyrinth, you know, with the ribbon, you know, going around the maypole. So, and that's just dancing around the labyrinth is creating that energy, and you're getting people participating. And, you know, and even like with the simple walk within the labyrinth, you're getting people participating. And another thing about labyrinth as a ritual tool is this isn't new. You know, the labyrinth, it could have been, I mean, there's not complete evidence that it was used as a ritual tool, but a lot of people have walked it as if it's been a ritual tool, and a lot of people walk it as if they're reaching Godhead, you know, and when they get to the center. So why not? You know, it's not a scary thing, and it's not a religious thing, although some people may be afraid of it as to being that way. Another thing is what you want to keep in mind is when we work with the labyrinth as a ritual tool, what makes it work is that it's sort of a simple sequence, you know, because basically you're walking the labyrinth with an intention, and the work that goes in the center is the work that you do to make your manifestation come through, whether it's, say, if you're doing a full moon to make something manifest, maybe you do want to work in the center of your labyrinth to make that happen. And that's very easy. That's I won't say it's easy, but it's a simple choreography, because you're walking your labyrinth, and once you get to the center, you know, you'll be going through these slow and gentle and purposeful movements, you know, whether or not you want to say a lot of words or a little words, you know, you just want to state your purpose and keep your intentions true. And also, and when you're incorporating what's happening around you, you know, or in the ritual, you just want to be aware of that, because that's what happens. Like, since the labyrinth is a container and a sacred space, I mean, you know, if someone, it's up to the leader to also be the holder of that space of who's ever in the labyrinth, or, you know, you could either walk alongside that person or just be aware of what's happening while you're in that labyrinth in that ritual space. Because pretty much anything can happen, you know, so especially if doing, say, like, did we ever do one for Samhain? No, we didn't, right? We just did a finger walk. Yeah.
But
can you imagine?
Like a good idea.
Yeah, right, right? Because it's such a time where the veil is the thinnest, and you can just take a walk through the labyrinth and make these connections, you know. And that, too, could be another great, I'm sorry, I'm like getting some ideas like what I could do for next time to set up a yeah, I definitely want to do that, set up a Samhain labyrinth. I have some ideas, but like it's all about the intention. Like even like with the winter solstice, you'll see a lot of labyrinths that are designed, like a lot of people will use you know, tea lights or some type of illumination for their labyrinths, and that just, you know, creates that psychic cue as well. And also the labyrinth, you can celebrate the seasons, you can walk it, create a ritual designed around the seasons, you know. It's just an open and welcoming space where you can create all these different types of rituals and movements that you can do around the labyrinth, just to make it work as a ritual. I like to do a lot of healing labyrinth walks, and lately a lot of them have been like virtual. But even I did the last one I did at Philadelphia Pagan Pride. We did a healing. It was for the Global Healing Response labyrinth walk, and I purposely created a concentric five. Concentric circle labyrinth, and I made the center big enough so the people could gather in the center, and that's where the meat of the ritual was, or the energy of the ritual. You know, we made the space sacred, but once we got into the center, we were able to voice our intentions, you know, call upon those healing elements. And it was very strong. And for that, we didn't use any ritual tools. We just used ourselves. We made sure we healed ourselves beforehand. We did a meditation. Some of the women walked the perimeter of the labyrinth beforehand. It was really a strong and healing ritual. And not much is needed when you do something like that. What's needed is yourself. And, you know, and just being clear and open. And this could be done, like, you could do monthly rituals, monthly healing rituals, you know, or monthly moon healing rituals. I mean, now, you know, we have a lot of that type of energy open to us.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, come to think of it, I think we did a labyrinth at Samhain, a Republic ritual. We had a labyrinth.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We did.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, that was.
A lot of people. There were a lot of people, so that you had spoken before about maybe bumping into someone else as you're walking. And that worked out pretty well because people understood what they needed to do.
Yeah. And it's so funny. The natural thing to do, and that's what people were doing, is, you know, either stepping aside and letting the person pass or turning sideways where they could both walk in the path. I thought that was pretty good. One thing that I did learn from that is that I did have my circle smaller because the room dimensions weren't quite according to the dimensions that I had on my paper. So,
yeah,
but it all worked out, and that was good. I think a lot of people got an experience.
Yeah, it becomes organic after a while, and you can't choreograph it too exact because you never know what actually is going to happen until
right,
it happens.
Exactly. Yeah, and the crane dance. It's funny. There's the spiral dance. I guess that's what they call it, but that's like what they would do at Starwood. It was kind of like the spiral dance, or I don't know, maybe it was more like a crane dance where we go into a spiral and we're not on a labyrinth, but when I think about it, it feels like I was because of the movements of going in and out and in and out. So it's kind of more like a crane dance, and that's sort of like what they do as their opening ritual, which was not on a labyrinth, but it felt like it was because of the movements that they created, you know, going into that spiral, and we were all joined together, holding hands, making these movements. So that was pretty interesting. So the thing about, like, when you're doing the using the labyrinth as a ritual tool, it may sound like it's really simple, but the energy and the emotional experience, or the experience that you may have, may not happen right away. So usually when you're journeying out, like I say, when ritual, we go into a sacred space, and it always seems like we're there longer, but we're not. It's the same thing. Like when we're journeying out of the labyrinth, it may seem as if you spent your time elsewhere. But what happens is you're coming out of that state of being held in a container. And this is a good time when you can reflect on what happened, you know, your experience in the ritual or your experience returning from the labyrinth. So that's really profound experience that makes the walk of the labyrinth personally your own, or working the ritual and the labyrinth personally your own.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes it almost feels like a ritual for me when I walk the labyrinth at Marble Collegiate. Like, I really like how they set the tone. You go in there, the tone is set. And especially with that, it's a replica of the Chartres Labyrinth. And there you can actually, like, almost go to the four corners because of, you know, how it's designed. It's like a four quadrant. You know, almost like a four quadrant labyrinth. If you look at it, you know how the circuits are aligned on the path.
Yeah, that particular labyrinth, it does have a very good tone when you're in there. The atmosphere and the music and just the lighting. Everything. It makes for a very, very good experience, a very deep experience.
Yeah.
And it's all safe. And there's nothing to be afraid of.
Yes.
Some people their first time may feel afraid, but really it's all about how you do it. And it's all yourself. So there's nothing really to worry about. Although,
right.
I mean, I can understand that there are some people, you know, the first time they're trying it, they might get a little, you know, just not sure what's going to happen. But
right,
then,
exactly.
Yeah, then it usually works out pretty well. It's a very comfortable place.
Yeah.
In that particular labyrinth, it's very comfortable, and the people who welcome you in are very nice. They're very warm and helpful, and they help set the tone as well.
Yes, exactly.
When you go in there.
Exactly, and that's the responsibility of the officiant or the facilitator to help set that tone and stuff. You know what's interesting about the labyrinth too is that the labyrinth has a lot of goddess energy to it, or divine feminine energy and wisdom, to it. And it could be because of the shape or the images that come out of it. You know, a lot of it I see has like a lot of feminine energy. And when you think about it, when you're walking the labyrinth, what are we walking upon? The earth. As we consider the Earth Mother, that's where we get our Earth wisdom from. And, you know, when we stand in the center, you know, we have we raise our arms to, you know, still to divinity. So it's very divine interaction that we have with the goddess, the god, and all those divine energies that we could call upon on the labyrinth. Because I think the labyrinth is more feminine, but not saying that, I mean, there's definitely masculine, I think there's a good balance of masculine energies in there too. But I think when a lot of people walk it, it becomes inherently divine or feminine.
Divine.
Yeah.
Divine feminine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so let's see. There's a lot of different ways to use the labyrinth as in ritual. Like you can use it for healing, like I said before. And there's a lot of different designs, a lot of contemporary design labyrinths that are out now where you can create ritual around them. Now, one, I've sort of been drawing it because it's a project that I'm creating in my mind that I'm hoping to bring to life. There's a labyrinth that Lars Hallett has designed, and it's called a conflict resolution labyrinth, where people can enter from the top and the bottom. Now that itself, I think, can create a ritual because you're walking with this intention to create resolution, and whether or not if you're saying it in mind and doing it in action, you're walking upon this path to create change. And that's, there we go. That's the important part of using the labyrinth as a ritual tool.
Yeah.
Yeah. What basically happens over time is like this doesn't have to be like when you use the labyrinth as a ritual tool, you're constantly learning, you're constantly transforming, because that's the purpose of the labyrinth, using it as a ritual tool. And you can use it as a daily ritual tool, like some people walk the labyrinth every day, or some people just, however often you use it, you're creating change, you're learning lessons, you're transforming yourself. And you're centering yourself. You're going inwards and you're coming outwards. And that's pretty much, it's a pretty simple concept, basically, working with the labyrinth as a ritual tool. There's and I think you can use the way as you would do, like how some people would do standard ritual, you know, or standard ceremony, you know, basically as you walk the labyrinth, you know, the perimeter of the labyrinth, you make the space sacred. Now you're pretty much creating ritual right there and then. And it's your journey. No one else is, you know, even when you're there with in a group mind, you know, and that just makes all the difference, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so even, like, there's labyrinths we can do for, like, blessing labyrinths, like, or rites of passage. And wedding ceremonies. A lot of people get married on the labyrinth, and sometimes they make them processional, where, like, through a different... different ways. Like sometimes the triple spiral, they have a labyrinth where you can walk in two different directions. As a processional labyrinth, you can walk in different ways to get to the center, and then you do the ceremony.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's just so lovely.
Yeah.
Because all of those things, like any rites of passage, those are all rituals. Even if you do something very simple, just a simple thing in the morning every day, it's actually a ritual.
Yeah.
It's just your, like a daily ritual.
Yeah. Yeah. See it as moving energy, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, you're creating sacred space, you know, you're moving energy. And, oh, here's another thing that's really important. I'm bouncing around the place, but thinking about when you're closing down your ritual, what you want to do when you're closing down your labyrinth space is you could do the same thing. You could either hold hands. I wouldn't say you need to sage it again, but you could just hold hands or just, you know, walk around the perimeter and just, you know, walk around the whole perimeter of the labyrinth till you come back to the front of the center. And then that you can close the sacred space that way. You know, it's not really a complex. You know, it doesn't have to be complex. You know, it's always best to keep it simple until you decide you want to make something more elaborate, but you have to just make sure that all the participants understand what's happening as well, you know, so they could be a part of that action and holding the energy. So usually, like, say if we were going to the quarters of the labyrinth, Like I said, you would go to the north and south. Same thing as you would do on the altar. You know, you maybe want to take fire to the southern quarter or a candle to the southern quarter and bless that area, you know, and go to the eastern quarter, like maybe with, what do you want to do there? You want to go there with incense or, you know, incense and you know, call to deity or call to whoever in that area. And, you know, just work with the elements in these quarters and you call upon their energies to help make your secret, your circle sacred for the work that you're going to do. You know, you always want to do a meditation to get into that psychic cue or that purpose of what you're ritual is all about. So whether you decide to put your altar in the center of the labyrinth or before the labyrinth, there's always, you have to make sure that if you're going to do that, you have your altar on the outside. I mean, you're creating that space, or you're securing that space on the outside as well, or you're saging it or making it sacred. You know, make sure that you give an explanation of why the people are there, why you're walking that labyrinth, and you know what it's about. Because I know when I do have my open labyrinth walks, sometimes I get a lot of people that come up and they're afraid. They're like, "What is it?" And then once I explain it to them, they take a walk and they're like, "Oh wow, that really does make a difference. I feel the energy." They walk out differently. It creates change.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's basically just a matter of your intention, and the you know, some, you can design a particular labyrinth that maybe you've seen in a book or one that you like, or you can use a different type of resources or materials to make your labyrinth, or if you have a canvas labyrinth, or if you know somebody that can make a labyrinth, you know, then they can give you a particular design, and that always helps.
That's true.
Yeah. But going back to, ritual and the labyrinths, you know, the biggest labyrinth rituals have been, you know, the crane dance and the famous Beltane images that you see. And today you find a lot of people still use the labyrinth to do their Beltane rites on. And the crane dance, I actually have not seen that in action. The closest I would think the crane dance on the labyrinth is when I do the spiral dance, when I would go to this festival.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The crane dance would be very, you know, I would be very interested in doing a crane dance walk or ritual.
Yeah, that could be pretty exciting, because too, you want to have, when you do that, you want to at least have a small group, not too big of a group, because your circle could get a little, like, I don't know, a little distorted out of hand. But it'd be worth a practice, you know.
Mhm.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Let's see, what else can we say, or what else would somebody be interested in about using the labyrinth as a ritual tool? I mean, even when you go all across the board, there's labyrinths everywhere. And, you know, there's some people use some. Oh, here's one important thing, I'm sorry. There was a lot of questions about, should your labyrinth be entered in the south or in, you know, is there any particular entry level or entry space that you should have your labyrinth in? You know, I know if I were doing a labyrinth for like a particular group, say if, I don't know, I guess, say if you were doing like kind of like a particular cultural type labyrinth kind of walk. I don't know, maybe you want to start in that, you know, in that area that's sacred for them. Like say if you were doing some kind of native type of ritual, maybe you want to start in the north. Or you could start in the east, you know, build your labyrinth entrance in the east or the south or the north, you know, depending on what your, you know, what the work might entail, or what is it, not work, the deity or the culture, you know, the group that you're working with. It's so that will depend on, you know, if you want your entrance in the, you know, in the east or the south or the west or the north, but usually it helps to know the lay of the land, if or the lay of the space, you know, where you're going to have the entrance of your labyrinth to. So that does help set the dynamics of the, you know, ritual and the labyrinth itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we have a few minutes. And I'm glad that you were able to come here tonight, Ruthann. That's so funny because I was surprised to hear to hear your voice. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, because I would like you to actually come back with one other person and just talk more about your experiences and stuff, because we didn't get, you know, to talk about it that much. But
and
we will in future.
Back. Athena's very knowledgeable and full of information, and it was good to have your information in there. If you send me your name, I'll include you on the site and in our promos that you participated in today's show.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, Athena can PM it to me. And also,
yeah.
As I stated in the beginning of the program, I was looking forward to this, not only because you're doing the show, and I always look forward to that, but because I'm re-envisioning and I'm soon reviving my Mythikos Labyrinthos, which was my labyrinth practice that was last active over a decade ago in northeastern Pennsylvania. And
oh, wow.
I had on Facebook a group, and I was kicked off Facebook twice because of like hacking and other problems. So the group
Oh, yeah.
Is kind of languishing. Athena, you're part of that group, the Lost Labyrinth of Lemnos.
Yes.
So again, I'm kicked out of my group and I have to get back in and all this other stuff. So I'm going to re-envision the group, and this time I'm making my wife the admin. And this way, if anything happens to my account or her account, the other one, we can let people in. So I'm going to be inviting you there. And if you mm-hmm. are looking for a guest on a future show, I'll be available to, you know, we could talk about it on your show. And as currently in our entire schema, you will be our Lady of the Labyrinth. So, you know, officially.
Oh, cool. Cool. This is great. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to the future stuff. And, yeah, and doing some more stuff with Lost Labyrinth of Lemnos when that gets back set up as well. Yay!
Yay. And that's based on an actual tradition. There was actually a lost labyrinth on Lemnos that got lost. And it's
yeah.
mentioned by ancient writers up until the time of the Romans. Where it is described as being, there's a lot of other mythical stuff that happened there. And that's where part of my family is from, too. So I've spent a lifetime collecting like a little obscure lore and piecing it together like a jigsaw puzzle. So I'll be sharing that. And then Lemnos is older than Greece. It was part of a Pelasgian Empire a lot of the myths now they're finding came from there. So it's an older strata of myth. And the Lemnians are also related linguistically to the Trojans and to the Etruscans. And there's a different slant on mythology. So Hercules, for instance, was not Terra's enemy in this mythology. They got along quite well. Athena and Hercules were married in this mythology. you know, so, and their son was Ares. So there's a lot of differences between this Pelasgian or Trojan, Lemnian, Etruscan look at mythology. So I'll be introducing
wow.
a lot of those elements as well.
Well, and that's the mythology before the classical mythology.
Yes, before the classical mythology.
Wow. Oh, excellent. Wow, that's going to be More interesting to hear, too. Because, you know, sometimes these underground labyrinths, I think they were more like mazes, like the one that they found in Egypt. And because they have all these different cubicles, and they weren't necessarily the same size. But that one that they found in Egypt, it like spans like thousands of miles.
Uh-huh.
And they still haven't uncovered it completely.
Where exactly is that?
I could make up a name, but I completely forgot. It comes to my mind, and then I forget. But that's a good question. I will find that name, but it's not. I'm really sorry. I'm sorry. I don't remember the part of Egypt it's in. But I know it does span like a large piece of land. Yeah. But anyway, I just want to say I have a handheld finger labyrinth walk that's coming up on November 26th, and that's at 7 p.m. And you can, if you like to sign up for that, you can sign up for that at meetup.com, Labyrinth Walking, and that has a small fee to it. So you can join us in the finger walk and meditation, and we might do a little sound bathing with that as well, because I do sound bath. I'm a sound bath practitioner, and I like to play my own music while walking the labyrinth. So hopefully we can get that happening, and it's a chill and walk labyrinth. I want to thank all of you. I want to thank you all for listening. I want to thank Ruth Ann for being my impromptu guest. I'm so happy you were here. Thank you, Ruth Ann. And thank you, Hercules, for making this possible.
And I've asked all my hosts, and I'll ask you now also before we run out of time, dream bigger for 2022.
Yes.
So dream, let your imagination and your spirit soar, and everyone's had such great ideas, so we're going to attempt them throughout 2022. So we built a very solid foundation on the new channel over the past couple of years. We've tried very many things. Some were very successful, like Your Living Labyrinth, and some we've done only a couple of times that they didn't really go anywhere. But I really want us to fly in 2022.
Great. Okay.
Fabulous.
And
will
now
do.
We have 2 minutes to go.
Cool. Yep. 2 months to go.
No, 2 minutes to go. So if you'd like to wrap
oh,
up.
Two min- oh, 2 minutes to go. Duh. Okay. So, well, if anyone wants to ask, or you can email me at athenadugan.com if you have any questions about the labyrinth as a ritual, tool. I have like outlines that I've created for my own personal labyrinth rituals. But two, feel free to, you know, if you listen into the information, you know, that you can get an idea from there, and just be creative about it. Be able to allow yourself to experience as well as, you know, use the labyrinth as a meditation tool as well.
Thank you so very much, Athena. Always a pleasure, always an honor, and I always learn something. And thank you for that. And thanks to all our listeners. If you called in and you're in our queue, you might wind up on our show like happened today. If you clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you're going to listen to us later on demand, until next time, this is all of us wishing all of you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And we'll close, as we often do, with Ginger Ackley's If You Can Dream. Thanks again, ladies.
Thank you, Hercules. Thank you, Ruth Ann.
Bye.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky. But only if you can dream, if love is true,